When in your life have you felt most lonely? For me, it was when my family moved from Indiana to Colorado in the middle of my high school years. I went from a tiny high school here where I knew most of the kids from grade school, first grade, all the way up to a school three times that size where I knew no one. I wanted badly to fit in, and so I started telling jokes. I must confess that that's where it all began. I must confess that I was something of a geek back then, and I know that's hard for you to believe, my suave, debonair self today, but back then I was something of a geek, and I really wanted to fit in, so I started telling jokes. I remember I walked up to a cheerleader at the new school one day, and I said to her, "I'm reading this new book, this great book on anti-gravity, and I can't put it down." She didn't get it. I said to one of the linebackers on the football team one day, I said, "Did you hear about the photon who checked into the hotel? The bellhop said, 'Do you need help with your luggage, sir?' The photon said, 'I don't have any luggage. I'm traveling light.'" The football player didn't get that either. One day I was so desperate, I walked up to a stranger in the hallway and I said, "Do you know what kind of sound a subatomic duck makes? Quark, quark, quark." So as you can see, you even know what a quark is. So you have to explain this to you. So you see, I was struggling to fit in, still do, I guess. And so it was, all kidding aside, it was. When I moved to Colorado in the middle of my high school years, I was painfully lonesome. The worst time of the day was lunchtime, when I would come out the cafeteria line into that cavernous cafeteria filled with tables, with the roar of laughter and conversation. Everybody was in groups. Everybody knew somebody. And there I'd be standing with my tray looking for some place to sit. I would feel like everybody was looking at me and thinking, "Oh, that's the geek from Indiana that has no friends." I would literally sit close enough to a group of people that hopefully others would think I had friends, but not so close that that group of people would say, be tempted to say, "Hey, you're not part of us. Get out of here." It was what I felt at that time in my life. It was the most poignant pain I have ever experienced. I have no doubt that at some point in your life, you have probably felt the same. But what if it was different? Imagine if somebody, just one student in that high school on one day, had said to me, "Hey, would you like to sit with us? I would be standing up here today telling you the most incredible story about the most incredible person, about that angel, that saint, that instrument of God, that miracle worker who through a simple act of kindness made such a difference in my life, like breathing air into a suffocating soul." What if you could be that someone for somebody? What if God wants you to be that someone for somebody? Let's start with a prayer. God, awaken us to all the lonely people in this world and to the incredible power that we have to bless them. Help us to come to realize that by reaching out to someone who is alone, we are engaging in perhaps the greatest spiritual act. We can be Jesus to somebody. Show us how. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So last week we began a new sermon series called How to Neighbor. I want to remind you again this week that this sermon series originated at Life Church in Oklahoma City. so the pastors of Life Church deserve credit for much of the content that I'm sharing with you today. Last week, we began laying a foundation by seeing that according to Jesus, God's command in Leviticus 19:18 lies at the very core of what it means to be a deeply spiritual person. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. We saw last week that Jesus gave an expansive definition to that term neighbor, indicating that it applies to anyone we come into contact with, especially someone who is in need. We studied last week the parable of the Good Samaritan, and we saw that the Good Samaritan did three key things that made him such a good neighbor to the dying Jewish man. He empathized with the injured man. He took time to draw close and understand the situation faced by the dying man, and then he acted to help. Now, today, we're going to take that general principle and ask, what does it look like to respond this way to a person who has a specific kind of need, the need of loneliness? We're singling out loneliness today because in the fast-paced, disconnected, highly mobile, don't have time to talk, send me an email culture that we live in today, there is a veritable epidemic of loneliness in our world. Loneliness is not just something that is experienced by widows and orphans. It's not just something that is experienced in prison or in nursing homes. You can be a stay-at-home parent and feel isolated in the world. You can be a student in a dormitory surrounded by other kids your own age who are like you, and if you're not fitting in, you feel like you don't belong. You can be in a busy workplace, people all around you, but you can still feel deeply lonely and isolated in your heart. You can rise to incredible success in your career path, but find yourself at a place where you say, I don't feel like I have any real peers that I can confide in. You can contract an illness that affects you so dramatically that as you walk about in your life, it feels like nobody can really understand what you are up against on a daily basis. You can be married to someone, sleeping next to the same person every night, and still feel painfully alone if you're in a dysfunctional marriage. One afternoon, two good old boys, Earl and Bubba, were out on the lake in their boat, chewing tobacco, drinking some beer, fishing. As they sat there in silence, waiting for the fish to start biting, at one point, out of the blue, Bubba breaks the silence and says to Earl, I've made a decision. I'm going to divorce my wife. That woman hasn't said two words to me in 2 months. Earl spits in the water, takes a slow sip of beer, says, Bubba, you better think about that. Women like that are hard to find. You can be married, sleeping next to the same person every night, and still be painfully alone if that's a bad relationship. Everywhere we look in the world around us, we see people who are lonely, people for whom your kindness, the gift of your presence, no matter how fleeting, could be like a cup of cold water to somebody who's walking on foot through the desert. You could be Jesus to somebody who is desperately lonely. But how? What does it look like to be Jesus to lonely people? Answer, we love the lonely the same way Jesus did. Today we're going to look at three specific things that Jesus did and that we can do to love the lonely. The first of which we find in today's gospel reading, Mark chapter 1. You heard Duty read it just a few minutes ago. Mark chapter 1 tells us that as Jesus was traveling through Galilee and preaching, that one day, verse 40 says, a leper came to him, begging him, and kneeling, said to him, if you choose, you can make me clean. In the ancient world, leprosy was a dreaded and devastating disease. The first telltale signs that you might be contracting leprosy would be aching in your joints and your muscles, coupled with fatigue. If you were diagnosed with leprosy, back then you had on average about a 10-year lifespan left. As the disease progressed, rashes would begin breaking out on your skin all across your body. Eventually, lumps would appear that were filled with pus. It was a grotesque sight. As time progressed, as the disease progressed, your vocal cords would be affected and your voice would end up sounding like somebody else. It wouldn't even sound like you anymore. Your face would slowly grow contorted, and often your jawbone would swell to many times its normal size so that you would stop even looking like a human. You would look more like a lion with its mane. And as the disease reached its final stages, flesh on your body and parts of your body would actually start to rot while you were still alive with the stench of that. It was such a terrible and dreaded disease that in the ancient world, as soon as you were diagnosed with leprosy, you would be forced out of your home and out of your village to live in the wild, to beg for and forage for food. In fact, the religious laws in Jesus' culture commanded that if you had leprosy and someone was approaching you, you had to call out to them, "Unclean! Unclean!" to warn them not to get too close to you, because leprosy was believed to be highly contagious. That's the background to the simple description that Mark gives us in Mark 1:40. One day, a man with leprosy came running up to Jesus, apparently dispensing with the requirement to shout, "Unclean, unclean." He rushes right up to Jesus and kneels before him, right in Jesus' space. If you had been Jesus, how would you have felt? How would you have reacted? But not Jesus. The next phrase in verse 41 tells us that Jesus was, quote, moved with pity. Have you heard that phrase somewhere before? If you were here last Sunday, you will recognize that is word for word exactly the phrase that Jesus used in the parable of the Good Samaritan to describe the Samaritan's reaction to the dying Jew. Jesus is here practicing what he preached. He was moved with pity. And the text tells us he stretched out his hand and touched him. Wait a minute, Jesus, don't touch him. Don't you know he's got leprosy? Don't you know it's highly contagious? But moved with pity, Jesus reached out and touched his swollen cheek. Probably the first time that man had experienced another human touch since the day he was diagnosed years ago. Jesus reached out and touched him. And the text says, Jesus said to him, "I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately, the leprosy left him. There are many gospel stories where Jesus performs miracles of healing by simply speaking the word. Why then is it that in this instance, with this highly contagious disease, Jesus instead chose to touch this man? Probably because he understood that for this man to achieve holistic healing, not just healing of his body, but healing of the wounds to his soul that he had endured since he was diagnosed and cast out of his village, Jesus understood this man needed more than a word. He needed a touch. The gift of human touch, the healing gift of touch, it is the first of three key things that we see Jesus doing when he interacts with people who were lonely. He offered this man, he loved this man through the gift of touch. Who is it in your life that may need that gift from you? Chris Beal tells how when he was in high school living in Central Texas, he got a part-time job during his high school years working as a checkout clerk at the local grocery store. He said it was called the HEB grocery store. I guess that's a chain throughout the South. I don't know if you call it HEB or if it's all caps, HEB. So anybody ever live in Texas, I don't know how you pronounce it. But anyway, it's H-E-B. Okay, for short, I call it Heeb because I'm so with it. And so at the Heeb grocery store, Chris was the checkout clerk at one of them at the Heeb grocery store, and he says, I was really fast. Man, I could scan things and bag them. In fact, he says the H-E-B grocery stores apparently would periodically back then have contests that you could enter in to see if you were the fastest checkout clerk in the West. And so one year, Chris entered into that competition and actually was a state finalist in the state of Texas because he could scan and he could bag so fast. Actually, it makes me feel better about myself. I mean, talk about a loser, right, entering a checkout clerk competition. But in any event, you get the picture. He was Mr. Efficiency. When you were in his line, man, you would get through there quick. One Thursday, he said, at 4:30, an elderly woman I hadn't seen before came through my line as I was scanning her groceries. He says, we struck up a conversation, and I quickly realized that this is one of the wittiest, most wonderful, most awesome old ladies I had ever talked to. She introduced herself as Ruth, and once he had finished bagging her groceries, she handed him the money. He got the change out of the cash register, counted out the change in her hand, and then he said, I don't know why, but I just felt moved after I'd put the money in her hand and counted it out to put my hand on top of hers and say, have a great week, Ruth. Ruth left, and sure enough, the next Thursday, 4:30 p.m. on the nose, there was Ruth in his line waiting to get through the checkout line. Every week after that, you could set your clock by it, 4:30 on Thursday. There was Ruth, always coming through Chris's line. He'd always repeat the same procedure. They'd have a little conversation, then he'd count out the money, put his hand on hers, and say, have a good week. 2 years came and went. He finished school. He was ready to go off to college. It was his last week of working at the grocery store. On Thursday of that week at 4:30, there's Ruth. Scans her groceries, they have their conversation. Finally, he says to her, Ruth, he says, I'm going away to college, this is my last week here. It's been great to get to know you, but I'm curious about something, he said. Every week you come in here at 4:30 on the nose, and often you stand and wait in my line when I've got lots of people and the other line has nobody in it. Why? He says she began to cry. And she said to him, I come here 4:30 every Thursday because I know you're going to be here. And I get in your line no matter how long it is. Because I know when you give me my money back, you're going to put your hand on mine and say, have a great week. And that is the only human touch I experience all week. You could be that someone for somebody. Who in your life needs the gift of a hug, the squeeze of a hand, a pat on the back, an arm around the shoulder? That's why here at Life Journey Church, by the way, we give lots of hugs. You can go a whole week and nobody touches you, puts an arm around you, but by golly, when you come to Life Journey Church on Sunday morning, if you want a hug, and sometimes even if you don't, we're going to give you a hug. Yeah? Because human touch is healing, soothing, powerful. It is the first of three key ways that, like Jesus, we love the lonely. We love with touch, number one. And number two, we love by listening. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of listening that we normally do. Normally, we listen to respond. While you're still talking to me, I'm thinking of how my clever response is going to go, how I'm going to show you that you're wrong and I'm right, how I'm going to tell you what your problem is and how you need to fix it. That's normally how we listen. We listen to respond. Hurry up and finish. I got something to say. That is not the kind of listening that Jesus models for us that we should be aspiring to. One day, one evening, an old man was walking down a country road near sunset with his dog and his mule. And as they were out for a leisurely stroll, a pickup truck came careening around the corner way too fast and crashed into the old man, his mule, and his dog, knocked them all in the ditch. In the aftermath, as the old man healed up, he decided ultimately to sue the pickup truck driver. And so at trial, when he was put on the stand, the old man was put on the stand, the attorney for the defense, the attorney for the truck driver, put him through a brutal cross-examination. At one point, the defense counsel says to him, "Mr. Jones," he says, "I want you to answer this question with a simple yes or no. Did you or did you not, in the immediate aftermath of the accident, as you were laying there in the ditch, did you or did you not say to my client, 'I'm perfectly fine'?" "Well," the old man says, "it happened like this. Me and my dog and my..." "Mr. Jones," the defense counsel says, "a simple yes or no will do, please. Did you or did you not, in the immediate aftermath of the crash, say to my client that you were, quote, perfectly fine?" "Well, now I need to explain it to you. It went like..." "Mr. Your Honor," the defense counsel said, "please instruct this witness to give a simple yes or no answer." The judge says, "Counselor, I think this man is trying to tell us something, so let's just let him tell it at his own pace. Go ahead, Mr. Jones." "Thank you, Your Honor. It was like this. Me and my mule and my dog were walking down the road when this pickup truck came around the corner way too fast and crashed into us and knocked us into the ditch. The pickup came to a stop, and the guy got out and ran over and saw my dog was so badly wounded there was no hope. He went back to his pickup truck, got his rifle, came back and shot her. Then he walked over to my mule and saw my mule broke its leg. He shot her. Then he walked over to me and said, 'And you, how are you doing?' And that's when I said, 'Perfectly fine, thank you.'" Too often, we engage conversations like that aggressive attorney, trying to guide the conversation to a certain conclusion, to short-circuit the conversation. "You don't have to tell me the whole story. I already got it all figured out. Let me tell you your answer." That is listening to respond, and that's not the kind of listening that makes us feel better, less alone. In fact, have a conversation with somebody like that, and you feel more alone than before you had the conversation. It's worse to have had a conversation with somebody, and they just don't hear you. Jesus models a different kind of listening, listening to understand. Remember on Easter Sunday a couple months ago, we talked about that passage in Luke chapter 24 where 3 days after his crucifixion, Jesus appears as a stranger to two of his followers who are walking along the road to Emmaus. As Jesus approaches them in the guise of a stranger and as they're walking along there, Jesus senses their deep sadness and he asks them, "What's going on?" They say to him, "Are you the only person in Jerusalem who doesn't know the terrible things that have happened these last few days?" Jesus says, "Tell me." Now, Jesus knew what had happened. He knew what they were going through. But still, he says, "What things? Tell me." And he walks along the road to Emmaus with them for hours, listening as they share what had happened and how they felt about that and how their hopes were dashed. And at any point in time, Jesus could have said, "Ta-dum, it's me. I'm risen from the dead. Get over it. Move on with your life." But Jesus didn't. He spent the whole day with them before finally he reveals to them who he is. Why did Jesus do that? No doubt he understood that if they were going to be able to fully embrace the resurrection and move forward in their life, they needed to process what they had been through. The grief, the shock, the hurt, so that they could then move forward. And so he gave them the gift of his listening ear, patiently letting them walk through all that they had experienced. We are called to offer that same gift to those around us. This past week, my spouse David had an interesting encounter. As most of you know, David finished seminary about 7 years ago. And since then, he has volunteered as many hours a week to the church as he can. So here we know him as Pastor David. But his full-time job during the week is as an environmental engineer for the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, IDEM, they call it for short. And so he's often called out to do inspections for suspected hazardous waste and things like that. And so this past Wednesday, he had to travel all the way up north of Fort Wayne to a little one-horse business located in the countryside outside Columbia City, Indiana. And when he arrived there, he found it was just a little garage, a towing and body repair shop, and with just one guy, the owner, that worked there. And so David walks into the garage and introduces himself as an inspector from IDEM, here to inspect on a complaint. And he says, this guy just goes off. For 10 minutes, he says, this guy is just fuming mad, throwing things at the wall, at the floor. He's saying things to David like, you guys were just out here last week. It turns out that somebody from a different unit at IDEM that inspects for something different had been out there the week before, and you called the county on me. Apparently somebody from the county had been there inspecting. You're trying to destroy my business, and you're trying to turn my kids against me. And he goes on and on, fuming for 10 minutes. When he finally goes silent, David says to him, are you done now? Have you got it all out? The guy says, I'm not sure. David says, well, I want you to get it all out. Go ahead. And he does. For 5 more minutes, this guy is yelling and hollering and throwing things until he finally stops. Then David says to him, now, I have a question for you, he says. You've been talking to me like I'm somebody else. Who are you talking to? He said, the guy sighed and said, my ex-wife. He went on to explain to David that he'd been through a bitter divorce and that his wife had sworn that she was going to destroy his business. He said she had turned his kids against him. His son had worked in the business with him, not anymore, but his son knew exactly what they did in the business, so apparently his son had been calling all kinds of different government authorities and filing complaints that government authorities were having to respond to. He told David the whole sad story. David said, I'm really sorry for what you're going through, but please understand that when we get one of these complaints, the law requires us to inspect. So what do you say we walk through here together? So they walked through the garage together. David says, I was careful to point out to him all of the good things he was doing. Oh, that the way you're storing that over there, that's perfect. That's good. And what you're doing over here, exactly right. And when he got through the place, David said, now there are just two things I need you to work with me to fix. And he sat down and he walked this guy through the regulations, a couple regulations that probably as a small business owner he never even heard of. And he helped him figure out some simple ways he could fix that without burdening his business. And then he took the time to get on the phone with one of his suppliers, a paint supplier, to help them understand how they could better ship the product to him in a way that would help him to achieve better compliance. And when all was said and done, as David was ready to leave, he says this guy started to cry. There were clients there, he says. He shooed his clients out of the garage, and he apologized to David for how he'd acted, and he thanked him for coming by. Can you imagine thanking a government inspector for coming to your business? But that's not why he was thanking him. It wasn't an IDEM inspector that visited that man in the countryside outside Columbia City on Wednesday morning. It was Jesus in disguise, Christ incognito. I picture God in heaven looking down on that man's poor plight and his desperate isolation in the world, nobody to talk to, and saying, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? And having to reach all the way down to Indianapolis to get an IDEM inspector up there, to get somebody there who, instead of reacting to the guy, would listen to him. It would have been so easy for David to say, I'm just going to dial 911, get a state trooper out here, and then you'll know who's in charge. David could have done a really mean inspection, nailed him on a lot of things. That's how we would want to respond. But instead, God was able to bring up there somebody that had enough Jesus in him to listen. Who in your life needs you to listen to them like that? Maybe it's one of your difficult clients. Maybe it's somebody in your immediate family, your extended family. We love people who are lonely with the gift of touch. And we love them by listening. By the way, some of you may be sitting here today thinking, Jeff, I'm the one that's lonely. I hope somebody ministers this way to me. Of course, our focus today is on how we can reach out to those who are lonely. But if you are someone who's lonely, by the way, one of the most powerful things you can do to break your isolation is to practice what we're preaching today, to reach out to others who seem isolated. Give and you will receive, Jesus said. Pressed down, shaken together, good measure, it will be given back into your lap. The other thing, if you're lonely, you can do is let us love you. Become part of one of our small groups, one of our Oasis groups, or one of our discipleship classes. We want you to be welcome in this place. End your isolation. Become a part of this church family. But of course, that's not our focus today. Our focus is on how we can help those who are lonely. We love them with touch. We love them by listening. And finally, thirdly, if we're going to love people who are lonely the way Jesus did, we love them with time. Pastor Craig Groeschel at Life Church in Oklahoma City puts it this way. Jesus was always going somewhere, but never rushed. I like that. Jesus had a lot to accomplish, a lot more than we have to accomplish. He was always going somewhere, but he was never rushed. There's an interesting story in Mark chapter 5 where Jesus is on an urgent mission to get to the home of Jairus. Jairus' daughter is near death and desperately needs healing. On his way, though, to Jairus' house, there's a woman who encounters him along the way who herself desperately needs healing. Jesus stops. He allows the interruption. He takes the time to minister healing to her. There's a story in Luke chapter 5 where Jesus is in someone's home and the house is filled with people to overflowing, people spilling out the doors, and Jesus is having an opportunity to share his message. The text tells us in Luke 5 that there are Pharisees there. There are religious leaders there, and so this was an important opportunity for Jesus to share his message with some very influential people. But as he's in the middle of his teaching at this house in Luke 5, along come some folks who are carrying a paralyzed friend of theirs on a stretcher, and they want to get that paralyzed friend to Jesus so Jesus can heal him, but the house is so full they can't even get in the door. Undaunted, they climb up on the roof and hoist their friend on his stretcher up on the roof. And as Jesus is in the middle of teaching all these people, they begin to hear commotion and noise up on the roof, and it sounds like digging and knocking around. And then some daylight appears in the roof and debris starts falling down. And Jesus has to interrupt his sermon. I mean, can you imagine if somebody was up on the roof today and trying to dig through and making all sorts of commotion? We'd go to the police officer outside and we'd say, shoot that guy down off the roof. We got important stuff to do here. We can't be interrupted. But picture the scene. Jesus is in the middle of this very important message and the roof starts opening up. And he has to pause and wait for however long it took him to make the hole big enough to lower the stretcher through. And then Jesus ministered holistic healing to this man before resuming his message. I don't know about you, I want to be more like Jesus. I want to be more generous with my time. I want to be much less obsessive about my precious schedule. Who in your life needs the gift of more of your time? Let me close with this. Bob Russell tells how years ago when his two boys were little, there was a nightly bedtime ritual where when it was time to go to bed, he or his wife would say, time for bed, and he would always give the boys a goodnight kiss. And then usually it was mom who would take them upstairs and tuck them into bed. One night as mom's tucking their littlest boy, Phil, into bed, Phil says, Mom, I can't remember if Dad gave me a goodnight kiss. So when mom went back downstairs, she told Dad, and he had an idea. He tiptoed up the steps and snuck up to Phil's bedroom door, roared like a monster, dived through the door onto the bed, wrestled around with him, tickled him. They laughed. He gave him a kiss. And then he said, I sat there on the side of his bed, and for about 15 minutes, we had a wonderful conversation, quality time with my boy. Apparently, Phil really liked this because the next night, when mom was tucking him in, He pretended to forget. Mom, he said, I can't remember if Dad gave me a goodnight kiss. So Mom told Dad, and he snuck back up the stairs, repeated the same thing all over again. Phil liked it so much that it got to the point that when he was downstairs and it was time to go to bed, he said, Dad, I'm going to bed. And then he raced up the stairs so that Dad would have to come upstairs to go through the monster thing, to wrestle with him, to talk with him, to give him his goodnight kiss. So this went on for quite some time until one night after he'd been wrestling with and laughing with Phil and had their conversation, as he was walking down the hallway, it occurred to him, what about Russ, his older boy? Every night Russ is in his bedroom and hears me making all this commotion with Phil. I wonder if he feels left out. So Bob snuck up to Russ's door, roared like a monster, dived on his bed, wrestled around with him. He said, my boy was big enough, he about whipped me. But when we settled down, he said, I said to Russ, Russ, I just want you to know how proud I am of you and how special I think you are and that I love you so much. He says, Russ was kind of awkward, wasn't sure what to say. Okay, Dad, is all he said. The next morning, as Bob was walking down the hallway, Russ calls to him from out of his room. Dad, can you come in here a second? He walks in, sits down on the edge of the bed. He says Russ was hemming and hawing, having trouble finding the right words. Finally, Russ said, Dad, thank you for coming in here last night. I never get too old for that. Who in your life needs more of your time, or your listening ear, or the gift of touch? Maybe it's somebody in your immediate family or your extended family. Maybe it's somebody in your circle of friends or a next door neighbor. Maybe it's somebody in your workplace or somebody here at church. Who is God laying on your heart? You can be a good neighbor to that person. Be Jesus to that person. Be the miracle that person needs. Thanks be to God.